you very much. Okay, thank you for being here. Lovely to see colleagues from Friends International, friends from Reading, friends from Latin Link and All Nations. So you're all here, some of you, to support and encourage, even though you know me a bit. So that's lovely. And for everyone else, welcome as well. Yes, so I'm trying to make a case for international student ministry. I'll make some bold claims. I'm not trying to rubbish anybody else, but we're going to have some fun, I hope. And just to say that, yeah, Friends International is an organization set up to work with international students in the UK and Ireland, and particularly to help churches to do international student ministry. So if that's anything we can help you with, that's the aim, is to excite you about international student ministry, something that you might be able to apply and enjoy and develop in your own situations. And so Friends International, specifically with international students, you'll notice there's other student ministries around the Christian world, and we work particularly closely with Christian unions and other Christian student ministries around the country. We like to work with the Navigators and with Agape and with Fusion and others, Christian evangelical ministries that have a student focus. In fact, there's a meeting each year of the national leaders of these different agencies. We met about a month ago, and that's a lovely thing. So we are essentially resourcing and enabling other student ministries. If somebody's interested in reaching students, and as we'll find, probably about 25% of the constituency are international, so we like to help others do what they want to be doing anyway in terms of reaching students. And that's probably true for your church, is where there are students, a percentage of them are international, and we want to make the case for paying particular attention to the international students. We are just focusing on Britain and Ireland, UK and the rest of Ireland, and we then link in with networks across Europe, particularly through the International Fellowship of Evangelical Students, and globally with the Lausanne movement. So we only do a small amount, but we link with others. And so the boldest claim I'll make today is we're looking at why international student ministry might be the most strategic ministry on the planet. Small claim. And the second part of it is why that doesn't matter. So I want to explain to you, hopefully if I haven't done by the end of the talk, you'll tell me, why international student ministry might be the most strategic ministry on the planet, and secondly, why that doesn't matter. But because everyone thinks they are strategic, and the word strategy comes from having a battle plan. If you set your vision and mission, you need a way of getting there. So the strategy ought to be the battle plan. And the strategic objective is good for getting organized and making best use of resources. We all want to do that. And for knowing why you're doing what you're doing. So when we claim to be strategic, we think we found a good way of getting done what we want to get done. And our aim is to help you and others to reach international students, and we think we can find a way to do that. Just to shortcut the talk, really, it doesn't only matter about a really good strategy, it matters about what God is calling you to. And if you are in a place where there are no international students, you may well decide international student ministry is not the thing. And so more important than strategy is God's calling on your life. Only get involved in international student ministry if God calls you to. And we can discuss guidance and God's calling, but that's not the topic for today. Yes, that's good. But first, Gabriella, chief hero here this morning on the sound and vision. I am new to these things in terms of I submitted my slides to Keswick Convention weeks ago and then turned up expecting them just to sort of pop up. And apparently I was meant to bring my laptop and get organized and do it myself. But the slides are there, and they will be when the talk is put online. The slides will be there with it, so you will be able to see the slides, but you can also see them here today. So we like to see international student ministry as combining a couple of things. You could maybe picture it as we want to be welcoming, we want to be into hospitality, and we want to be into friendship evangelism. We've got people from all over coming to us. So we can picture international student ministry as a combination of a sort of largely Old Testament model of mission, and a bit of a New Testament model of mission, open to discussion on this. But we are saying that Old Testament mission is essentially and largely centripetal. As if you're a scientist, a chemist, it's about pulling things in towards the center. So we have this passage here from 1 Kings 8, verses 41 to 43. This is the dedication of the temple, and it's Solomon's prayer at the dedication of the temple, his prayer to God. Suppose there are outsiders who don't belong to your people Israel, and they've come from a land far away. They've come because they've heard about your name. When they get here, they will find out even more about your great name. They'll hear about how you reached out your mighty hand and powerful arm. So they'll come and pray towards this temple. Then, Solomon asks God, listen to them from heaven. It's the place where you live. Do what those outsiders ask you to do. Then all the nations on earth will know you. They will have respect for you. They'll respect you just as your own people Israel do. They'll know that your name is in this house I've built. So right there in the middle of the Old Testament, a desire for those that come to see the temple, those who come under their own steam, they will understand what God is all about and worship him. We know there's exceptions in the Old Testament. Jonah was sent. I've heard Jonah described recently. Maybe he's the most disobedient prophet in the Old Testament, but he's also the most successful. Enormous amounts of things. People came to faith in Nineveh through Jonah. But that's I'm just pointing out the exceptions. But centripetal mission, international students are coming to us. They're coming to our shores. It's their own initiative. We'd love them to discover more. We can show them something of God while we're here. Then centrifugal. If you're spun out by the centrifuge, we are more spun out, aren't we, in the New Testament, Matthew 28:19. So you must go and make disciples of all nations, baptize them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Now, again, we can picture that's not the whole thing. Not everybody goes abroad. Not everybody is gone. Maybe we're all sent because we're sent next door or within our own household or our neighborhood. But I'm just picturing Old and New Testament gathering in and sending out. And in a sense, international student ministry combines the two. We have people coming to us that we want to share Jesus with, and we've got to go and find them. They're not far away, but we are sent, we think, to go and find them. So God was concerned for foreign visitors from Old Testament times. Solomon's praying to God at the dedication of the temple around 3,000 years ago. We might also want to see Abraham, Genesis 12, that's 4,000 years ago, where the intention of the calling out of Abraham and his people, the family, was that all nations would be blessed. So we might not want to fall into the trap of thinking the Old Testament is all about Israel and the chosen people, and that now we go and do mission in New Testament times, because the concern for everybody was always there from the beginning, from the calling out of Abraham. God also sends us out since the New Testament 2,000 years ago to all peoples and places to spread the good news. An international student ministry is highly strategic in reaching people from many places who will then go back as Christians on the inside of their own cultures, relating to families and communities. They pay to come to us, they return at their own expense, and we feel highly strategic. So people who come from countries where they might not hear about Jesus, who may go back to do fascinating things when they go back, influential people, they're coming to us, and we can take the opportunity. That, we claim, is the strategic nature of international student ministry. So where we got to? Marries together the centripetal and the centrifugal. So what else can we say about international student ministry? We have elites coming to us. Many international students are at master's or PhD level. They're chosen by their governments, or they're sent by high-achieving families. And they will return, quite a lot of them, to government, to academia, to business, and other roles. And they will return to shape their countries in strategic ways. So it's truly an exceptional demographic. A few years ago in Reading, I met. He was doing a master's in economics. He had been working at a tax office in Beijing, and he came as a government-sponsored prize winner. That was his prize, to be able to study a master's in economics in the UK. He was a fascinating guy. He did things like going to see the local production of Dickens's Christmas Carol. He was just interested to that level of British culture. He was reading books about the 1950s Korean War because he wanted to understand all sorts of things around his country and his reality. We spent fascinating time together. He went to a lot of other events in Reading as well. As far as I know, he's not a Christian. His family came over, went to see Durtle Door. We had a lovely time. I mean, international student ministry is a lot of fun. And he has not decided to follow Jesus, but we were glad to welcome him. I think at this point it's worth saying also, highly strategic, we want to welcome everybody and anybody who comes. It all starts with a cup of tea, whether you're ordinary or exceptional. We're interested in welcoming international students, often lonely. Yes, so from some of the most restricted nations on earth, international students come from countries where it's difficult to live as Christians, let alone to be missionaries or for missionaries to be there. And they are sending their future leaders here to study. We would struggle to serve as Christian missionaries in their countries or to communicate Christian truth openly in many cases. But while here, restrictions are removed and opportunities present themselves. If you were going to another country, you'd want to say, let's find out about the country. What's interesting? And that's true for so many international students amongst us. They're glad to be welcomed, particularly into a British home. And most of us can do that. We know how to boil a kettle, make a cup of tea. That's where mission starts. We welcome people and we from quite exceptional places. And we are able to make friends with them and share Jesus with them. So, while they're away from home, they're open to be learning about our country. We'll be glad to get to know us. We can explain how the UK has a Christian heritage. We're not claiming we're a Christian country. We can explain why Christians do what we do and how the Bible has affected our culture and more. So there's great opportunities just to be friendly, just to be welcoming, explain the Christian context that Britain, the UK, has gone through. And then opening our homes, spending time with new friends builds the platform for sharing how Jesus has changed and is shaping our lives. We make genuine friendships with appreciative and fascinating visitors who give us insight into the wider world and who we can help find eternal truth as well as practical daily encouragement along the way. Some, the PhDs, the masters, will be here for a good year, maybe 3 years. Great time to get to know people, follow them through their journey, encourage them and help them. Others might be teenagers from European countries, secular countries that don't get to hear about the gospel where they are either. We've got to have a different approach to the language schools and the summer visitors, but again, opportunities abound. Hospitality and friendship evangelism. Local churches and Christian student groups are looking for ideas and help to make this possible. Friends International brings expertise and experience to help local churches and student groups do what they want to do anyway, reach out amongst those already among them. 25% of university students in the UK are internationals, and language schools are in many towns and cities. The partnership. So the UK, this is a report from The Guardian in February this year. The UK is strategically placed like no other nation on the earth to educate top global leaders. The English language setting is attractive. People like to learn their stuff in English. The extensive UK university context and reputation is admired internationally. So this is the Guardian report from February, noting that the UK has contributed to the education of more global leaders than any other country on the planet. So this is currently, of the presidents, prime ministers, and monarchs currently around the world, in the sort of 240 countries, 50 of them have done some education in the UK, and that's more than those that have studied in the US. You can't read the whole report, but you can look it up, and we'll. But that's just the headline. Yeah, UK universities educate the highest number of world leaders. So Britain is placed where no other country is in terms of the opportunities we have amongst us. And again, not only global leaders, we're interested in any international student looking after the loneliest and the least, but there are strategic aspects. Okay, I think I got stuck on my... Sorry about that. There we go, right. Time for you to tell us who knows who any of these people are. Wave and shout. Oh, there might be a microphone, but it's probably just a... What? There's a mic. Who knows who that is on the top photograph? Myanmar, Burma, Aung San Suu Kyi. So Aung San Suu Kyi is a former Myanmar-Burma state councillor. She took degrees at Oxford, a BA and an MA in politics, philosophy, and economics, and then politics in 1967 to 68. And she studied at the School of Oriental and African Studies, an MPhil in Burmese literature between 1985 and 87. Her husband was British. Her children, I think, still live in Britain. But, you know, there's somebody who came to study university amongst us and went on to do very prominent things. Next one. Assad. Is that what you said? Yes. So this is ex-president Bashar al-Assad of Syria. He studied at the Western Eye Hospital in London, Paddington, London, from 1992 to 1994, specializing in ophthalmology. He's an eye doctor. His British wife, his wife is a British Syrian. His father was president before him. His brother was meant to be the next president. His brother died, I believe, in an air accident. And so he was recalled to Syria at that point to be the next president after his father. So again, notable people amongst us at different points. Now, extra top prizes if anyone knows who the third person is. Not Sudan, no. Okay, this is Adama Barrow. He came to study real estate, property management in London from 1998 to 2002. While he was here, he was a security guard at the Holloway Road Argos store in North London. He's now the president of Gambia. So again, some quite ordinary people amongst us. He needed to earn some money. He was available. He presumably had friends. Did he ever meet Christians? As far as I know, we didn't manage to reach any of these three people. Some of the top two probably came as very privileged people. They may not have had a lot of contact with ordinary people. But if you're a security guard in the Argos store, if you're not from the UK, somebody's going to have to explain Argos stores afterwards, maybe. But it's not a very sort of highbrow. You don't have to get exclusive rights or membership to get there. So he was doing a very ordinary job in London when he was here. So what's our opportunity? The scale is quite enormous. This is language school students, around 500,000. It's quite difficult to measure. Lots of language schools, places maybe where you're from. Bournemouth, Canterbury, Cambridge, lots of other places, Oxford. Especially this time of year, we like to organize particular outreaches to reach international students, organize something every day of the week with an evening, Bournemouth, elsewhere. We don't know exactly where everybody is. It's less easy to count them. But yes, often the aforementioned European teenagers here for a few weeks, but equally unreached in their often secular post-Christian societies. I went to see the outreach in Bournemouth for a day a couple of years ago. A whole group of Saudi lads enjoying being part of the cafe. They come along, they have drinks and snacks, they have fun activities. They're learning English during the day in the language school, and then they come to practice their English with Christians in the afternoon, in the evening. Optional Bible studies available. Quite exceptional opportunities to reach. People are really pleased to make some friends and find that the Christians are the ones who are making the effort. So a real opportunity, a large number. That's quite a large number of people coming to our country every year. And then a bit more exact, these figures are from the Higher Education Stats Agency. We know who is where, what country they've come from, where they're studying, that sort of stuff. Over 700,000, slightly down from the year before, but up. I mean, I've got things I was saying a year or two ago, 600,000. Way up into the 700,000s, slightly down this year. We'll see what happens. But there are a large number of university students. We find London particularly challenging. Where am I going? Yeah. We know where they are. London is hard to do ministry in. I think London churches find that. A lot of international students come to London, over 100,000, and they may live a long way away from where they study. They'll probably study during the day and then go back to where they live a long way away. How can we do ministry amongst international students in London? Is it on campus during the day? Is it where they live in the evenings? We think there's probably around 50,000 international students studying in the square mile around Marylebone. You've got Imperial College, London School of Economics, King's, and others. Great concentrations of international students. We're still working out how to effectively reach more of them. And then there's places like Coventry, a lot of international students in Coventry because it includes Warwick University as well as Coventry University. Hatfield, where the University of Hertfordshire is, great increase recently of international students there. No French international staff worker. A lot of churches actually relate to Hatfield from, say, Hertford and from St Albans, but not a great group of evangelical churches in Hatfield, so we'd love to see more happening there. Some of these places, we've appointed people and we're looking for the finances to make it work. Others, we've got grants from trusts and finance and we can't find the right person, so it can go either way. But we feel there are enormous opportunities. People coming from everywhere, they're going back to everywhere. They are everywhere around the UK. I've got some figures I'll show you a bit later. And then we can, where are we going? Okay. Global elites from closed countries to our doorstep said that. These are the figures. So really, we go by city. Sometimes there'll be 3, 4, 5 universities in each city. There's about 50 campuses in London. So those are the ones, those are the top 10 of where there are numbers of international students in universities, just universities, not only language schools. London by far ahead, Edinburgh and Glasgow really up there, Manchester we include Salford. Birmingham, 5 universities in Birmingham, we can't work across them all yet, but we know they're there. Coventry, the 2 big universities. Leeds, we work with partner ministries, there's a ministry called Transformation Leeds, not part of Friends International, but we like encouraging and working alongside. Likewise, Bristol, BISC in Bristol, Bristol International Student Centre, Hatfield, the Hertfordshire University, Nottingham, again, 2 universities. So much to do, but great opportunities. Right, a bit about us as Friends International, as an organisation, a charity working in the UK. That's on the banner at the far side, transforming new students, transforming nations. This is part of the strategic claim. Is that you? If you see a student's life transformed for Jesus, and he goes back, he or she goes back to a prominent position in their country, you might see the country affected. I don't know. I was thinking about historical and biblical examples. A historical example: Constantine, not a student, but you change somebody's life, and that changes the course of history. Possibly that's the big claim. We're not trying to stop anything else happening. We also need mission to happen for the whole population. If you go to the base camp here, lots of people sending out people across the world. And that needs to happen too. That's how you more reach the whole population. This is an approach to reaching an elite that might, we're making use of particular opportunities. And so I'm not at all arguing against sending people abroad to work along to churches or plant churches in places all around the world. And then another, that's the high level strap line. The other phrase we use is friendship and faith with international students. We want to make genuine friendship. There is a risk being called Friends International that we are professional friend makers and the biggest hypocrites in town. How can you be a professional friend maker? Is that fair? I don't know. Discuss. But what we want to do, what we think we can do, is offer genuine friendship, welcome, cups of tea, spend time with people, enjoy that. But we also know that real friendship, genuine friendship, is about sharing Jesus with people. Jesus says to his disciples in John 15:15, that he doesn't call them slaves or servants anymore because slaves do not know their master's business. And instead, Jesus has called his disciples friends because he's told them everything he's learned from the Father. That was his understanding, definition of friendship at that point. So we like to think the same, is that we want to be real friends with international students. We will naturally share what it means to follow Jesus with them. So that's the case for friendship and faith with international students, ground level strap line. So the vision for Friends International, what we want to see is to see international students transformed by the good news of Jesus. That's the basic, is we think it's all about responding to the good news of Jesus so that they fully engage with the mission of the church in the world. That is about their own personal transformation, it's about what they do next, and it's about all they go on to do. And it's fully engaging with the mission of the church, so it's becoming part of the church ministry across the world. And then what do we try and do as Friends International? We try and work with the church. This is us trying to serve, trying to help things happen. Very few things are all about Friends International. We sometimes will organize a cafe or event in one place, but often it's on a church premises or on campus in partnership with the Christian Union. That's a slightly ducking it. Church, as in the broadest concept of God's people, to work with the church to communicate the good news of Jesus to international students in both word and deed. practical stuff, help them move into their room when they arrive in the city, welcome them into your home, show them how to get around and what's important about where they're living. But word and deed and in whole life, cross-cultural discipleship, that's the ultimate aim, the overarching task. So how do we do that? And again, offering a model, other ways of doing things, perfectly acceptable. And we like to see our staff as trainers and practitioners. We have staff in 35 places around the UK. Relatively, staff are expensive. You need to raise support. Staff raise support. But volunteers are fantastic. So if staff can be trainers and modeling how to do international student ministry, that's how we think things are really going to take off. So we work with hundreds of churches, thousands of volunteers around the country. We'd love to help you do what you want to do anyway, reaching international students. We have staff, 90 staff around the country in 35 places, including a support center, helping with materials and making everything work. That's based at All Nations Christian College in Hertfordshire. Some of them are part-time. We have affiliates. Here we go. Where are we going? Resourcing churches to Christian students. It's all about partnership. It's about what churches want to see happen, and we are alongside and often depending on churches and Christian unions to see what's possible. We make various focus points. One is that we understand that some people are from especially hard-to-reach countries, the ones already mentioned about where it would be difficult to be a Christian, or where people are just not interested in coming along to our events generally, and we need to be a bit creative. So we have a hard-to-reach focus, trying to maximize the opportunities, specialize, train people. How can we reach people from certain parts of the world? Where can we go to go and find them? Where are they studying? So a hard-to-reach focus. And then a returnee focus. We talk about talking returnee focus from the day one. If your student comes to an event on their first day in your city, your town, if they were to become a Christian, what is the impact for them? What would that mean for them and their family and their situation, their future career? So we like to talk returnee focus from day one. What happens if you become a Christian in the UK? We also link with about the same number of affiliates as staff. So people might already be employed by a church, working in international student ministry. It's great for us to link up, train together, share experience, learn best practice together. Then we'll have an apprentice program for 2 years. We call it REACH. And we like to bring people on, preparing them for full staff. We have an apprentice program for 2 years that we will bring people on to staff. We have a graduate trainee program for 1 or 2 years called REACH, where we like to help people learn international student ministry. We have, we try and resource people with books. I was asked to sort of talk about what books we have. This one is Christianity or Western Religion, is available on the bookstore in the Mission Hub. Written by a colleague, is Christianity a Western Religion and other questions that international students ask. In here, you've got 20 questions answered by somebody with extensive experience of working with international students, and that's great if you either want to give this to an international student or mug up on how you might answer questions with international context, with intercultural context in mind. We have a book by another colleague, A Better View, a Bible overview, again, written for international students to be taking in cross-cultural, intercultural aspects. We have a little history, Mission Possible, written by a third colleague of international student ministry through Friends International. And I haven't brought here a guide for local churches, a handbook for how local churches can get involved in international student ministry. And then courses written by other colleagues, some of whom are here today. ID course, International Discipleship, work through a course with international students. Think Home, a guide for international students preparing for home and returning home. One is written from a Christian perspective, or for Christians, to encourage them to think about what it means to be a Christian going home. One is more general. And then the visa course, an opportunity to find out about the Christian faith. So we're not an extensive publisher, but we do have some things that we can resource churches with. So what else? We like to work on stats. We know where students are. We want to see what we're doing each year. It's not all about the numbers, but we try and keep tabs on annual outcomes survey. What have we got here? So staff last year, 80 staff around the centres, and then 10 support staff, some part-time making things happen. We had contact, and by contact we mean somebody came to a meeting, not just that they received a flyer, but so realistic contact, 12,750 international students. Still a very small percentage of everybody who's amongst us, of that 700,000. But 1,200 of those 12,000 came to Bible studies, which was lovely. And we were able to record last year 67 decisions for Jesus amongst international students that we knew about, that we were involved in. We're not trying to claim that's all that happened, but that we were connected with. So there's things going on. There's lots more that could be happening, but we are glad to be doing what we can. These are the locations. The funny different colored dots are either full staff or associate staff that are employed by churches or affiliates. But most places around the UK, and where there are substantial numbers of university students, we're still looking to start people off in other areas, places like Liverpool, Hatfield already mentioned. Somebody came to talk to me on the stall yesterday. Katharina is not here, but she's from Ukraine. She's living in Hull. We'd love to have staff in Hull, Huddersfield as well, other places. There's lots of places we'd like to have people working. There's always more to do. Working with churches and Christian students. Some of it is on campus with the Christian Union. The students can book a room. We can go along and help resource and encourage and volunteers. I think particularly Friends International volunteers are likely to be older than the students they're working with, and older probably than the international students. The international students themselves fit in between the British undergraduates at aged 18 to 20, whatever, and church volunteers, because they're likely to be master's students, likely to be in their 20s or 30s. The value of an uncle or an aunt welcoming you into their home is, I think, particularly appropriate. So our staff are not all student age. Staff and volunteers, quite appropriately, a bit older and able to offer family setting sometimes. Good staff working with Christian student groups. Right. These are relevant questions, and it depends where we go from here. We'll move into a time of questions in a bit. Are you near a university campus? Is it already immediately part of your context? Are you seeing international students come to church anywhere, or do you know they're around you? That would immediately make it more possible. Either university campus or language school or an international hostel near your church. That may not be the case. Doesn't mean you can't get involved. Volunteers can travel to be on campus and be part of it. But that is a particularly relevant if you know there's international student around you. Can you offer a place for a weekly international cafe? Sometimes just a location, a church hall, is what it needs to get started. Can you offer hospitality at weekends, Sunday lunches, Christmas and Easter particularly? Came to me, to my wife and I, we had a meal near Christmas. There was actually, we advertised through the Christian Union and anybody we knew, Christmas meals being offered, come and spend some time in our home. We also put it to the international office at Reading University and said, this is what we do as a Christian Union, and there's local church volunteers inviting people. And so Linjan had come to no Christian events at that time, I think, and he heard through the international office that somebody was offering a meal. And we had about three others, I think, through the Christian Union. So we're expecting four for lunch, three then cancelled. Linjan came on his own, I don't think he'd never been in a Christian home before that. And that was a great, great thing to do. It was just a Christmas meal. And local trips to places of interest. Time with students is valuable. Time to just explore who they are, who we are, and any international ministry could start in those ways. Okay. We can get to questions a bit. Just to go back to the not strategic, it's the calling thing. I get stuck very often reading Colossians chapter 1. This is parts of 9 to 12. And this is the much more important thing than any strategic nature of international ministry. So Paul says to the Christians in Colossae, we keep asking God to fill you with the knowledge of what he wants. We pray he will give you the wisdom and understanding that the Spirit gives. Then you'll be able to lead a life that is worthy of the Lord. We pray that you will please him in every way. So we want you to bear fruit in every good thing you do. We pray that you will grow to know God better. We want you to be very strong. In keeping with his glorious power, we want you to be patient. We pray that you will never give up. We want you to give thanks with joy to the Father. He has made you fit to have what he will give to all his holy people. You will all receive a share in the kingdom of light. And my aim is that you get to do what God wants you to do. If that involves international students, that's very exciting. But more important is knowing his call on your life and responding. So there we go. I had some sort of suggested questions, but I'm really open to what questions you want to ask. What's it all about Christian community? We talk about getting involved in the community. What are biblical models? What's the role of hospitality? What's important for international student workers? You know, some of our models of ministry are evangelism. We're on the streets. We've got leaflets. We're going to put the Christian message out there in front of people that we've never met before. Others are going to spend time making friends and hopefully get around to sharing what it means to follow Jesus. So what are the sort of balances there? And community's incarnational ministry, what's the role of welcome, love, compassion, sacrifice, belonging before believing? So those are the sorts of things I think we could talk about. I'm sort of done. Matthew's here to see if you've got questions to ask.
This question is probably to do with sort of integral mission and quite a specific question about what happens when, you know, the cafes are taking place or the meetings are taking place. How do you sort of strike the balance between being genuinely friends and building relationships, but also taking opportunities to preach the gospel? And how does that kind of work? What is the percentage, the onus? How do you deal with that, I guess?
We leave things pretty open for different things to happen in different places, and people experiment, they work out what's going to work. I think we try and be very, very honest about what's going to happen in any event. Any publicity, if it includes any Christian contact, we want to say that. You know, like, come and meet Christians, learn your English, have some fun, optional Bible study available. We want that to be on the, or if it's announced during an evening, it'll be like for the next evening or the weekend. You know, we'd like to, out of this meeting, we can invite you, and we'll be very clear what's available. I think we do want to take opportunities available, but it's sensitivity, isn't it? It's Christian leading. You're led by God to be sensitive in any context. So we can be bold. We want to be, the more that we understand where people are from and their context, we know if it's too sensitive to talk openly. And we might want to be thinking about any government pressure we think they're likely to expect or experience. And what they might find is normal, how much they know about the Christian message. But if it's friendship, it can start slowly. And I think we find that most of our friends are very inquisitive, and they'll ask us. You know, you get some with translator apps, as they were, just typing in at first mention of God, what is the concept of God? And that's fine, and they go from there. And others who, I've decided I really want to know what Christianity is all about while I'm in England or Scotland, wherever. So, a lot of sensitivity needed. Yeah.
Thanks. I was just curious if you're able to share some of those strategic countries you were prioritizing in terms of where there's the students coming from certain countries. I think you had on there that you, not targeted, but they were prioritized. Is that
different countries?
Just to get a flavor of the kind of opportunity the people you're aware of or alert to that are coming to our country that wouldn't be reached by many other ministries.
People come to this country to study from almost every country on earth. So we'll try and do some research to see what that means for each of them. I think it's still very personal. You start with the person and then their context, you know, we'd start inquiring their context. I was able to ask, you know, what was the situation for him and his family and his context. So we think from some countries, governments are shadowing and monitoring and asking students from any one country to keep in touch with each other and with the supervisors or government representatives. I don't think that's a particular problem as long as we go sensitively. So we would, I think it's more, there's no one, there's characteristics we find from students from different countries, but I don't want to sort of tar anyone too much, I suppose. I suppose it's It's about working with the person and then trying to understand their context. But yeah, we are finding countries from, some students from China are feeling more cautious now about coming to Christian meetings because that might not be in favor at home or in terms of what their government think is acceptable. So, anything, Sue? Or calling Sue from Bournemouth and et cetera.
Yeah, there are countries that are closed to the gospel, like many Muslim countries, that actually when they come here are very curious and will come to meetings. So I think Alan's already mentioned Saudi students in Bournemouth. We have a lot of language students. They will come in large numbers to our cafes. So they're hard to reach in one way, but in another way they're not. But there are other countries, so Thailand off the top of my head, freedom of religion, but actually they tend to stay together a lot and they don't come to our activities. Mm. So they can be harder to reach than ones that we would expect. Mm. So I think every centre has to think, what are the students in your centre that are hard to reach where you are?
Yep.
And then think of ways of trying to reach them.
Yes, and our approach will be partly those specifics, how to reach Thai students in Bournemouth, say. But then we find also, if you get a large number from any one group, and your university in your town might have a contract with the Kazakh government or something to come and do teacher training where you are, but a big group of Kazakhs will be wonderful, but they will, if they dominate a meeting, our meetings are mainly about mixing and learning in an English context and deliberately meeting people from other cultures. So we can do specific things for specific groups, like I really won't reach the Thai in Bournemouth unless I do something particular, or you say, come on in and let's hope it's not only one group, and then we can mix, and that's part of the fun and the learning from each other, and the openness increases, I think, as you meet people from other parts of the world. Yeah,
sort of piggybacking a little bit on a question about people coming from certain countries where there's more supervision, shall we say, and control. It's quite common from certain countries then that other students are then sort of tasked to sort of report back.
Yep.
And so I'm just curious if you have, generally speaking, kind of a mix of, because for this reason, the dynamic between a bigger meeting with lots of people,
yes,
versus one-to-one is quite different.
Yep.
So I'm quite interested in hearing a little bit about if you have sort of any kind of strategy in terms of having both kinds of meetings. Yeah.
Yes, you do. And we will often start with a cafe meeting. Yeah. You'll advertise it as social, food, fun, games, possibly with an optional Bible study, but learn about the UK. So that's and that could be anything from 10 to 100. I mean, it could be all sorts of different ways of doing that. But that's the opener, that's the entry level. I think out of that, you want, probably as you set up, you want a known volunteer from the local church or the Christian Union on each table, and you want to be starting to make individual friendships. And then everything's open. We have also careful outlines for one-to-one meetings, how not to get into situations that are going to be unhelpful. So there is a balance between the bigger open meeting and the more targeted small. It might be, there's a carload can go on a trip to the local beach or something, and there'll be different size events. And it'll go from that initial easy to do bigger meeting to more specific. And the aim is more time, genuine friendship with people, and to see if they're willing to explore Christian faith. So it could be one-to-one, but most one-to-ones would be encouraged in a public setting. But they could be welcome into homes and meals. It's going to be sensitively done. No goal, no easy rules to define everything, but to help people to be appropriate in making friends and be intentional in sharing the gospel as appropriate and as a people are prepared to receive. Yeah.
Thanks. You mentioned meetings with people from Saudi, for example. I mean, would they declare themselves as Muslims, but perhaps with an interest? So, I mean, the people in that leading that group, I mean, would be, experts or well up on the Muslim faith, would they?
Would there be experts in the Muslim faith?
Well, to some extent, yeah.
We'd want our staff to be trained and aware, and we spend time in staff conferences and training working out how to be better prepared to reach and meet people from all sorts of different parts of the world. In my experience, some of them, let's say a Saudi language student, some would say amongst the group, oh, he's very religious. I'm not so religious. You know, so they'd be identifying themselves. But yeah, we would assume a Muslim background, but then they would be prepared to talk about how important that is personally to them and how much they want to explore other things. And then, yeah, it gets more sensitive as they, if they were going to make other decisions. Do you want to add to that or no? Maybe not. The answer could be no.
It can be unhelpful to have a large group from one ethnicity, as Alan has said, because they're watching each other a bit, but also they can dominate the cafe. Mm. But you often find there's one or two who've got a real spiritual interest, and then it's praying for time to talk to that one or two, I think. Yeah. And I know in Bournemouth we did have an issue with lots of Saudis coming to a cafe,
right,
and then it could be a bit off-putting for other ethnicities. And also it tended to be the Saudi men, and then the women were more hesitant to come along. I think everything has to be managed locally and carefully.
Yep. But we're putting out opportunities and waiting for response. And individual, you know, if somebody says, I want to follow up, I want to know more about Christianity. And specifically, when I came to England, I said I would explore Christianity more. So then you set up something more individual and take it at their pace. Nothing forced, all about offering and responding to initiative, I think.
Yeah, it's not so much a question, but an observation.
Oh, I'm off the hook already. Good.
The increase in immigrants coming to Britain means that there are now quite large communities from some of the countries that we would say were restricted of access, Iran being, say, one of them. We're finding in Canterbury that it's from the community as well, not just students who are coming to the Global Cafe, and sort of really starting to come to church and identify as seeking. So if you're talking with an Iranian, they actually, most of them will prefer to be called Persian. Mm-hmm. And secondly, some of them are actually going back to their Persian roots to Zoroastrianism. They've missed out going through Jesus. So we have to gently find a way back for them. They're not coming through an Islamic portal. The other comment I would like to make is that I was talking with a Moroccan girl, hijab and all. She comes with a hijab to the Global Cafe, and she asked me how I knew and how I went about getting jobs overseas, because I had shared that I travel quite a lot. And I said, well, I believe that God guides me, and I quoted Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. I won't quote it, because I'm assuming everybody knows what that is, and if you don't, look it up. But she said, yes, we've got a similar verse in the Quran. Mm-hmm. And I think that my experience really is that you can genuinely get engaged in conversation without criticizing or conflicting with what they are doing, mm-hmm. but just letting them open up to themselves. How they want to. She was trying to make touch base with me. I'd been in Morocco, I spoke French, I knew the town she came from. That was a big, big plus.
Thank you. To add to that, we specifically try and reach out to international students. There's a reason that we know where they are, where they're coming from, how long they're here for, and they're probably moving on to something else. We have to keep thinking about, are they going back to their home country? Are they going on somewhere else? Are they staying amongst us? But there's still a specific time when they're studying, and that gives us a focus. It's manageable. But a lot of what we do is very applicable to reaching out to internationals amongst you. There's a leaflet on the across the way on our stand. It talks about what is home. People are a long way away from home. They're lonely. The leaflet describes how God offers us a real home in heaven. So that is applicable to anybody who's feeling out of their normal context, and we can help them see how God offers a real home to people. So we don't generally turn people away from a Friends International event if they're asylum seekers, if they've settled here. And of course, a lot of the families who've settled here from other places, their children will be going to university. They may be staying in the UK forever, but they've got a big intercultural element to being students in the UK. So there's all sorts of fuzzy edges that are difficult to work on. We're going to stick to international students. We're going to be generous to everybody else. Some of what we've got really applies. But if it became a majority non-student event, we'd have to sort of think about, okay, how do we refocus? Can the church take that on and do it? And we'll do something for students particularly. So there's all of those. And then, yeah, in terms of how we reach out, I think that's absolutely right. We offer things, don't we? Generous pictures of God in Jesus, what the Holy Spirit is doing in our lives. We're not out to criticize for the sake of criticizing. Others may come back to us saying, well, that's not true in my religion, or, you know, I'm struggling with this in terms of what I've been taught. We can work with that. And the actual comparative text study is very interesting. I would do that in consultation with your local church. But you can. You can say, okay, this is what the Bible says about Jesus. Then somebody, a Muslim, would be able to say, well, actually, Jesus is in the Quran, and this is what we... And you work at it. I mean, that's got to be done, I think, carefully and thoughtfully. But certainly comparative text studies could be possible. Dr. Furman.
Can I try and answer a couple of your questions?
Please.
Particularly about hospitality and welcome. You know, you say, what is the role of hospitality? I just think it's enormous.
Yep.
And we've had one or two experiences of people come and visit our home, and they'll say, oh, I'm in my third year at university. This is the first time I've been in a British home.
Nice.
That makes me so sad, so sad. And so it makes me want to do better, you know. And then the role of welcome, because you might say, well, I don't know any overseas students or international students, so I can't ask them to my home. An anecdote of someone who was in England for about 5 years, did several courses, was exposed to the gospel all the time, actually became a Christian and was baptized about 3 days before he returned to his country. But when we first met him, he said he'd been in the center of town and he'd asked someone the way, you know, where do I find such and such a shop? This person said, well, you go down the road, turn first right, and it's second left. So he set off down the road and, you know, a number of seconds later, this older person came running after him to say, I'm sorry, it's second left and first right.
Okay.
And he was just absolutely so impressed that he is just some immigrant student, somebody cared enough for them, not just to give them the answer, but to go and help them. And I have no idea whether that was a Christian or not, but it made a deep impression on him.
Yeah, deep impression.
So I think welcome, just the people we see, show them welcome, show them hospitality, give them a hand. It's very powerful.
Welcome, a bit of time into our homes, basic cup of tea. Yeah. And I quote a story which is possibly apocryphal of, you imagine an international student coming, arriving to study with a present for their host, spending 3 years amongst us, taking their present home again because they never get into a home. That's a really sad thing. How can we be just generous, welcoming people? It's our privilege. We learn so much. And we'd be sharing something of Jesus by welcoming people into our homes when we can. Yeah.
Hi, and I was just going to add to the observation about hard to reach nations. So my name's John. I'm based at the Sutton Bonington Baptist Church, a rural context, but we have a campus that has a vet school and a biosciences school. But we kind of get to connect with the work in Nottingham, and I've been very impressed recently having joined the kind of support team for the Nottingham staff to see how they are training their volunteers and their new apprentice and reach workers specifically to reach some of the hard-to-reach nations. And I just think that's a really great model. So if you have the opportunity to get involved with a centre and you want equipping to reach a hard-to-reach people group, then, you know, Friends International, I can see that on the ground, they're doing a good job of it. And just as well, if you're interested in Friends International work and you're not a city dweller, do come and talk to me. Love to talk to you because we're looking to recruit somebody in there. Little neck of the woods to work amongst internationals. Am I allowed to say that, Adam?
Well, I could add...
Probably not.
No, fine. We'd love to see new staff recruited in sensitive places, including Sutton Bonington, And Hatfield has already mentioned Liverpool. There's lots to do, but it's not all about us, but we'd like to recruit people where we can.
You mentioned quite early on that you try and make sure that, like, you keep the kind of focus for people going back to countries that's yep. very difficult or challenging. You make yep. that a thought right from the start of yep. your interaction with them. How do you do that? What difference does that make in how you interact, how you talk, how you share the gospel, whatever?
This is definitely one for Sue, who leads our returnee focus within Friends International. But if you are going back to a country where you would be the only Christian in your family, you're going to have to start thinking about that fairly early on. Who do you tell when? Is it too difficult to tell your parents now, or will you? I think it was a student from Vietnam, studying in Oxford, went back, was able to tell her family what was going on. She'd become a Christian in the UK. With the advice of the staff members ongoing, there came a point where the family were going to go to the village for the ancestors, to honour the ancestors. And she was like, oh my, this is a new level. What am I going to do? The answer for her, for Bao, was to talk to her mum, who was the most sympathetic to what was going on. It could be the mum, it wouldn't necessarily be the mum, and say, her suggestion was, I'm going to come, I don't want to take part, can I be the photographer? So she was able to take all the pictures, honour the event, be with the family, not rejecting the family. She didn't want to get involved in the type of ancestor, not worship, but acknowledgement that was being asked. So she found a way through, and the staff were able to help her think. So, but a lot of different situations. Sue, can we? Depending, we're quite a lot on Sue here, you see. Very good. Well, teamwork. Yeah. She didn't know it at the time, but anyway.
No. it's a huge challenge. I think in the early years of our ministry, we thought if we were welcoming evangelizing, bringing people to faith, finding them a church when they went back, that was our job done.
Yep.
But we've had to really look further back and say, no, it's all about our discipleship while they're here. And it is on an individual basis. Where are they going back to? What sort of pressures are they going to face? So for some, it is overt persecution, and that needs particular preparation. But for many, it's more cultural and family pressure. And yeah, I spend a lot of my time training staff and volunteers in how we can disciple for some of the situations they go back to. It's hard because they're not with us very long, often. But yeah, it's a learning journey that we're all on. But we are committed to really thinking return and helping prepare people as best as we can for what they're going back to, and then staying in touch to help them in those early months and years of adjustment. But so happy to talk more.
Yeah, so some of the early stuff would be, here we are, you're considering Christianity, this is what it would mean for you in terms of living, but what would that mean in terms of church when you're back? You might like church in the UK, it's easy, but what would it mean? So from the early, if you're going to consider being a Christian, you are counting the cost. It's not quick, let's get you to be a Christian, and then, oh, by the way, it's going to be difficult. So it's a much stronger process to say, think about this, there are implications, and that'll prepare you better for the future. So that's why we're returnee from day one. Yeah. Thank you.